Greetings to all of the world. You know, last time I was here, I thought it was really, really cool that I got messages from literally around the world, and it's kind of cool. So, greetings, everyone. My sister Destiny and I were recently laughing about a story from back when we were both in college. At the time, she drove an old, beat-up Plymouth Reliant, one of those K cars, if you remember them. And as I remember it, one night, she gushed over how awesome AAA was. Then she excitedly told the family, "Plus, my car only needed to be towed twice this week." Now, confused, my whole family looked at each other trying to figure out, why was this good news? Until she explained that she had been towing her car up to 5 times a week. But no one needed to worry, according to her. She had it under control. She upgraded her roadside assistance membership to handle more incidents. See? Fixed. Finally, my mom, looking across all of us, she said in a kind tone, "Honey, most people don't need to be towed ever. Your solution is not AAA. You need a better car." Now, we can all laugh about all of that now, but my sister half-jokingly describes herself as too often on the struggle bus with tunnel vision. It can be all too easy for any of us to get wrapped up and focus on only one aspect of our little world, not realizing the much bigger picture. A kind, respectful challenge helped my sister realize there was something bigger at play. In the same way, we, as friends, can encourage each other. And as we'll see, God actually set the example for us. Here's the point. Friends help us stay mindful of God. Friends help us stay mindful of God. The Bible specifically labels several people as friends of God. Moses, for instance, talked to God as one who talked to his friend. But both Isaiah and James label Abraham specifically as one of God's friends. And in Genesis 18, if you'll start turning there, Genesis 18, it specifically shows us one such example. An example where this friendship allowed them to both talk and reason together. In this chapter, the Lord and two angels come to dine with Abraham. And as they're leaving, the Lord decides to explain what he's about to do in what Matthew Henry's commentary calls God's friendly talk with Abraham. So Genesis 18, and let's look at verse 20. Start in verse 20. Genesis 18, verse 20. "And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me. And if not, I will know." Going on to verse 23 now. "And Abraham came near." Now, note the commentaries point out that this particular "come near" has a sense of submission and respect. "And Abraham said, would you also destroy the righteous with the wicked?" Now, some might think Abraham is going out on a limb here, taking too big of a chance to talk to the Lord this way. But this friendship was strong enough for Abraham to respectfully challenge God. Abraham goes on and asks further, verse 24, "Suppose that there were 50 righteous within the city. Would you also destroy this place and not spare it for the 50 righteous that were in it?" Verse 25, "Far be it from you." Notice how this frames assumes the best. It's not accusing. It's saying, you're better than this. "To do such a thing as this, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous should be as the wicked. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right?" What follows in Genesis 18 is a back and forth, a give and take between two friends that I encourage you to ponder later. However, what strikes me is it's almost as if mortal Abraham is reminding the eternal God of the universe to stay mindful of himself. The commentaries liken this conversation to a prayer, where Abraham is bringing to mind, voicing the things that he knows about his friend, the merciful Lord and righteous judge. The Lord listened, just like he listens to you, because Abraham isn't the only friend of God. At Jesus' last Passover in John 15, he identifies that his disciples are his friends, and Jesus expands it to you and me. We know that the Lord is always mindful, so as friends, we can be like Abraham, who is reminding his friend and himself of the bigger picture in what today we would call an intercessory prayer. Matthew 16. The opposite of seeing the bigger picture is tunnel vision. And it happens quite easily when our focus gets all wrapped up in something. Usually it involves our emotions taking over. Matthew 16 shows an example of friends challenging each other because of tunnel vision. The disciple Peter confesses to Jesus earlier in this chapter of Matthew 16 that you are the Messiah. But then Peter gets upset when he hears the following news. Matthew 16, let's start in verse 21. Matthew 16, verse 21. From that time, Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised the third day. To quote Britannica.com, most Jews had some form of future hope. In general, they expected God to intervene in history and to restore Israel to a state of peace, freedom, and prosperity. So if you were part of the population in the first century that believed a Messiah would come, you expect that release and restoration would come through said Messiah. So for Jesus to be talking about suffering and dying, it just didn't make sense to Peter. Jesus is the Messiah. He's not going to die. Rome has to get what's coming to him. So Peter, being his brash self, had to rectify the situation. Many commentaries label Peter as the spokesman for the disciples, so he was likely saying what was on the rest of the disciples' minds. Verse 22, then Peter took Jesus, aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you." Remember, that was Abraham's same words. "Far be it from you, Lord. This shall not happen to you." Peter wanted Jesus to exert some of the same power he had seen used on behalf of others to save himself, Jesus, from the Jews. Peter might have even thought he was pulling an Abraham. "Far be it from you to die." But Peter was dead wrong. As Clark's commentary goes on to say, blind and ignorant man is ever finding fault with the conduct of God. Jesus' friend Peter didn't know what he was talking about. His vision had become tunneled because he wasn't being mindful. Look at how Jesus replies here in verse 23. But he, Jesus, turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me." And my margin says a stumbling block. "For you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." For you are not mindful of the things of God. Thayer's Greek dictionary defines mindful as to direct one's mind to a thing, to seek, to strive for. The Old King James Version translates this phrase as, "For thou savorest not the things that be of God." Now, I know what it's like to savor really good food, but it's likening that same anticipation and desire for God's plan and purpose. Matthew Henry's commentary says, "The things that are of God, that is, the concerns of his will and glory, often clash and interfere with the things that are of men, that is, with our own wealth, pleasure, reputation, end quote. He could also include our own thoughts and actions that we tend to elevate. He concludes, and here is the trial, which of the two we savor. So often we think we understand exactly what God is thinking, but Peter was wrong as could be. It's not recorded whether Peter got on the struggle bus after Jesus' own challenge back at him, but we do know from his Pentecost sermon after Jesus' death and resurrection, Peter surrendered his thinking and was mindful of God's plan. But what does being mindful of the things of God actually mean in our day-to-day life? You know, it means asking questions of God, of others, of ourselves, before mindlessly reacting. It means assuming the best and really communicating two ways, not just one. It means picking up the phone and calling your friend, whether it be in your literal pocket or on your literal knees. We need each other. Especially recently, it has been so hard not to get wrapped up in pandemic anxiousness. So many opinions, takes, misinformation, and lots of unknowns. It's been really easy to get emotionally wrecked. However, there's a better way than towing our Plymouth Reliant five times a week. And the answer isn't upgrading your AAA, whatever that represents in your life. We need each other now more than ever, in kind, respectful tones, to have one-on-one conversations, to keep us mindful of the things of God, because that's what friends do. We can keep in mind that what we're experiencing now is preparing us for the future, just like how what happened to Abraham and Peter prepared them. Yes, it's going to be hard. But the way of life the Bible outlines, and in the end, God's kingdom, is a beautiful and worth it goal. So, which friends are you going to be reaching out to? What is your big picture that might have become out of focus? Friends, help us stay mindful of God.